internet, and welcome to this special bonus episode of the Cracked Podcast. My name's Jack O'Brien. I'm the editor-in-chief of Cracked, and this episode is being sponsored by season two of the TV show Difficult People, which premieres on July 12th with new episodes every Tuesday. It's on Hulu. If you missed season one, it's from executive producer Amy Poehler and Julie Klausner, who stars alongside Billy Eichner. If you like any of those three people, aka have good taste in comedy, you'll love the show. It's hilarious. And it's a great excuse for us to talk about a subject that we've wanted to talk about for a while now. Why the world is so full of obnoxious people, people who are hard to get along with, and most importantly, why it's not our fault. So it turns out science spends a lot of time and attention answering the question, what the hell is that guy's problem? And we're going to talk about answers science has come up with to answer that question. We'll talk about the geometry of crowds, sort of accidental rules of how people orient around one another in crowded spaces, in basically the most difficult to navigate around clusters. We're going to talk about something called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is a specific short circuit of the brain that makes people suck at realizing they suck at something. The less expertise you have in something, the better you are at assuming you're an expert in it. A problem we're seeing crop up more and more in the modern world is that people's lives are too safe and easy. Studies have found that everyone basically has their own unique level of risk that they find acceptable, and that if one part of their life becomes safer and more pleasant, rather than being like, oh, it's even more acceptable than my acceptable level of risk, they're going to find a way to make other parts of their life riskier and more abrasive to try and seek out their level of risk. So if they're most comfortable at like a level of 5 on a riskiness and abrasiveness scale, and then their day is going as a 2, it's really easy and not risky and pleasant, they will find a way to crank the risk and abrasiveness up to a 5, which is crazy, right? We assume that people are happy to have peace and quiet. So yeah, if the person who just pushed past you on the airport moving walkway wasn't infuriating enough already, yeah, it's worth keeping in mind that they might just be reacting to the fact that they just got a raise and upgraded from a walk-up to a doorman building, or some other great thing has happened to them. And we'll find out why, even if the conflict is your fault, it's not really your fault, because your brain is wired to pay more attention to people who are angry and mean. This probably evolved because it was more important to notice and remember an angry person back when Homo sapiens were more likely to club each other to death over minor disagreements. So yeah, back then, remembering the face of a friendly neighbor, less advantageous to survival than remembering the face of the guy who, you know, made a slashing gesture at his throat with his finger and swore that he'd get you back if it was the last thing he ever did. You're gonna want to remember that guy's face. But after years of remembering only angry people and forgetting all the friendly faces you interact with, you have a version of the world inside your brain that is way more hostile and full of angry people than the world actually is. So that's good news. The world is friendlier and less hostile than the one inside your brain. There's this piece of advice that I've found to be useful that basically says, assume the best intent on the behalf of other people. So always assume that the person who is interacting with you has the best of intentions, assuming they're not a handsome stranger asking you to help them move a piece of furniture into his windowless van. But I think the reason that advice works out is because the world is less hostile than we think. Our brain is just designed to store hostility. So yeah, if you go around assuming the best intentions, you're acting more appropriate to reality than somebody who has their back up against a wall, swinging a knife around wildly at everyone who comes near them, shouting, "Stand back!" So the world inside our mind suspects reality is secretly out to get us. That's why movies like Rosemary's Baby are scary. They confirm Our most irrational fears, our loved ones and neighbors are all out to get us and are meeting behind our back, plotting to fulfill satanic curses. That's what everybody assumes about their neighbors, right? Anyways, that's just a few of the reasons we'll be talking about that makes the human species terrible at getting along with one another. Hope you enjoy it. I'll be back at the end for some footnotes. Talk to you then. All right, I'm joined in studio by Joshua Sargent, The Surge.
Hey.
And Alex Schmidt, a.k.a. Schmitty the Clam.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, Kappa. Can't.
Okay, a lot of heat right away. All right, here we go. Okay, all right.
It's just an hour and a half.
You sound like an idiot. Yeah, and this is going to be a very confrontational podcast because we're talking about why people are annoying. Why we had a conversation before about like why it's like really hopeful. Alex was here. We were talking about how like being nice to each other is like a superpower, I think it was. And like,
yeah,
Alex advocated for flower power and peace and love. And
I changed the world.
Yeah. It was really embarrassing to watch this guy come out and just publicly say that kindness is a good thing.
Yeah. And now we're doing the realistic version of that podcast where we acknowledge that people are annoying assholes. And as is depicted in the show that is sponsoring this episode, the world is just a series of collisions. Now, that makes it sound like the movie Crash is sponsoring this episode.
Oh,
and that's not true. No, but it's...
That'd be weird. If we started getting sponsorships from decades-old movies.
Right.
Well, it's a slow burn.
Yeah. A Knight's Tale is sponsoring our next.
Can they?
But I do think that people probably identify a little bit more with the sort of interactions that you might see in this show, where people are annoying and you're struggling to keep your voice at a reasonable level while explaining why they're annoying. And so we wanted to kind of dig into the reasons that's not an illusion. You're not imagining that the world is scientifically engineered to make people increasingly annoying. I think by the time I had done all the research for this episode, I believed that we live at peak annoying asshole in the history of the world.
I mean, it sounds like we should probably stop having science.
Yeah,
that would just be a better...
Yeah, that's how the cause and
effect
works.
We can close science, right?
Yeah.
We can stop it.
Shut it down, boys.
Just defund science.
One that I wanted to bring up right off the top that I think illustrates what we're talking about is an actual academic theory called the Dunning-Kruger effect, which is basically makes you bad at knowing that you suck at something. You suck at knowing that you suck at something. There's this Vonnegut quote that I love from Sirens of Titan. Alex, I know you're a big Vonnegut guy. The quote is, "The big trouble with dumb bastards is that they are too dumb to believe there is such a thing as being smart." And that's essentially a summation of the Dunning-Kruger effect, because the less skilled and educated you are, the less aware you are of how little you know. Then once you start becoming educated in something and you finally get a sense of, holy shit, there's this entire world of information, the wiser you become, the more aware you are of how stupid you are, how little you know.
And you can see examples of this in like anything that you become good at. You start seeing both in yourself and then somebody else who's learning that, you'll see them do the exact same mistakes that you made when you were first starting. Like, I remember when I first started playing guitar, I was convinced that learning Green Day really quickly meant that I was super talented.
Right.
And
you're
I was like, just
Hendrix
on top
was
of
a
it.
Hack.
Yeah, like, I figured this out. I can learn a Green Day song just by listening to it.
Right.
And then now, having played for a decade and a half, I'm like, oh no, I'm just garbage. And I always have been, and I have to just accept that. I also think it's funny that you quoted Kurt Vonnegut identifying the Dunning-Kruger effect in Sirens of the Titan, and then the Dunning-Kruger effect was, I'm reading here, first observed by David Dunning and Justin Kruger in 1999.
Oh, really?
So them identifying the Dunning-Kruger effect and thinking they were the first to do it is itself an example. Alex is shaking his head.
We don't need
like
science. We don't need it. Yeah. We're out.
We just need
you're,
Vonnegut.
We're through.
We just need
yeah,
Vonnegut.
We're all set.
Yeah, so that's an example of just, it's almost like how the geometry of the metaphysical world, like how the world just lines up and how things appear to us make us shittier to be around. Just generally a drag to be around. I don't know if you guys wanted to trade off. Another one that I found somewhat surprising was that basically the safer we make the world around us, the shittier and more risky we as human beings behave. Basically, there's this theory that we're all born, or we all learn a optimal level of risk that we all seek. So like, okay, I am on a scale of 1 to 10. I am most comfortable at a level 3 of risk. So if your car is suddenly so safe that you're down at a level 1, then you will drive like a complete asshole to bring yourself back up to a level 3.
And this is illustrated best by just cars throughout human history, in that the safer they've gotten, the faster we go in them.
Yeah. Not to throw another Monica quote in, but Mother Nighty has that kind of refrain Mother Nighty has that refrain about we are what we pretend to be, so we have to be careful about what we pretend to be. And if we decide that we're people in incredibly safe, invincible cars, then we start acting like idiots. We're really, really stupid because we're like, yeah, Ralph Nader fixed everything. I can just count on the airbags of this to save me from anything.
Yeah, I don't think I fully appreciated how just completely dangerous and horrifyingly deadly cars used to be. I'm just going to bring up another book that we all read when we were freshmen in college and thought we were brilliant. On the Road. If you look back at the book On the Road, he's like, man, Dean is such a good driver. He can just like keep the car straight for hours. And it's like, well, yeah, everybody can do that. But apparently like cars back then were such like shitty death traps that like that was seen as impressive. And so like doing a cross-country journey, you know, you were taking your life into your own hands, so you drove carefully. You only let the guy who was incredibly high on speed take right. the wheel.
You don't even have to go that far back. If you Google a video of a DeLorean being crash tested, I think it's my favorite video on the internet, because the test is the car going like 35 and it hits a wall and every part of the car condenses right on the driver's seat instantly. it just kills anything inside it the right. moment it touches something.
And if it flips over, you just can't get out.
Everything it's about impossible. That car was terrible.
They began,
aside from the time travel,
people driving DeLoreans began keeping hammers in their car because they knew they would have to hammer out of the windshield if they flipped over.
That's actually just solid safe. I have a hammer in my car in case I have a breaking window.
I think you told me that and thought you were crazy and still do.
I had been led to believe by the Blues Brothers that you just drive that car through thing after thing after thing, and then when you get out in front of that federal building in Chicago, like then it explodes. Right. Like then all the doors fall off all at once.
That's how it works. Yeah.
But apparently it's not true.
But I do think that the world just becoming safer, and even like interactions with each other, right? Like we're interacting with each other at a distance. We're not interacting as much face to face, or like, you know, having annoying confrontations with people as much. And so we're texting each other and we're going to be more aggressive and like be shittier people, or at least more erratic, because the world has just become safer. I think it kind of explains internet trolls a little bit. It's safer for them to stand back at a distance and threaten to murder a female blogger that they don't like, but they wouldn't do that to her face because they would get arrested, or, you know, they might get the shit beat out of them.
Yeah, so, we do seem to be trying to make the internet as dangerous as possible.
Right.
Like, we found a consequence-free environment where, you know, you can't be hurt, and we're like, but what if we could?
Right.
What if we told SWAT teams that there is a right. terrorist threat right. in the room of someone we're playing video games with?
Exactly. Yeah, that's insane behavior, but it's like, it really is. It all comes back to the movie Crash, you guys. We're in our own cars, and we just need to crash into each other to feel something.
Yeah, I understand that's available on DVD at this moment, right?
Is that why it was called correct? Crash? Yeah,
that movie is garbage.
Oh, it's so bad.
Well, also,
it won the Oscar for Best Picture. We're getting off track. I apologize.
Yeah. Well, that
internet interaction being said, it almost feels like a Dunning-Kruger thing too, where like people who are very bad at interacting with people just aren't realizing it, and the internet kind of greases the wheels of being able to talk to anyone all the time enough that they just keep doing it. Like they just keep making the same mistake and don't run into it.
Right.
And there's also that corollary to Dunning-Kruger where people who are great at things don't necessarily give themselves that credit or realize it. And like, I feel like I go on the internet and see that, and some part of me is like, oh, well, I guess that's how people talk. Like, I just need to, I'm probably just not caught up on like constant rage, I guess.
Right.
Then I snap out of it. But there's that moment, you know, where I'm like, I guess this is the world.
Yeah. The people who tend to leave comments generally, you know, I'd say 90% of the time are not experts in the field that they're talking about. They're people who have read 20% of the article and are like, I'm mad about
this. It seems to be exclusively like the more confidence you see in a commenter, the more likely they are to just be way, way wrong.
Yeah.
Like there was someone commenting on a YouTube, a video I was in about, and he was saying like, you can tell by this or whatever that they're using a blue screen instead of a green screen because they can't afford a green screen. And it's just, you know, this is, I see this all the time in work where I work and da 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 da. And like he had this whole thing. We use a green screen. It's not like green is not more expensive than blue. Also, no, we just have a green. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. That's one of my favorite commenter tropes is when they lead the comment with, as a person who studied this at unaccredited technical Podunk University, do know that. And it's like, I mean, I don't know, man. Maybe you don't. Like,
yeah. If you're so good at this, why are you in here just like talking about it? Why aren't you out making a living at it? Yeah, another way that like the safety balance works out, I feel like, is teenagers. When we're teenagers, we're like at our most bodily healthy. We're like at the healthiest we'll ever be. And so we behave like reckless assholes because we're just like, I can never die.
Also,
just like driving 90 down the...
Up to a certain point, your brain can't process consequence properly. Like you don't draw the connection. It's the most fascinating thing. And I think it's really well illustrated. If you ever work with high schoolers, like I did briefly for a couple of years, it is amazing how they just like, you can see them not making the connection, like no matter how hard, like because they keep saying like, oh, if you work hard in high school, you it'll pay off, you'll go to college, then you will get a good job. And they're like, yeah, they say they believe that, they do not, it doesn't gel in a fundamental way. And not because they're stupid, it's just because their brain isn't done growing yet.
It's the Dunning-Kruger effect again. It's kind of a combination of the two things we're talking about, because in the Dunning-Kruger sense, it's like they're just old enough to think they have things figured out, but they're just young enough to like not have anything figured out and like not know what the fuck they're talking about. So it's like they're just at that right level where they say a little bit of knowledge is a dangerous thing. And I think that's basically sums up teenagers, right? They're like old people, they're so stupid. Like with their driving the speed limit with their eyes open.
Also, knowledge is dangerous. Again, shut down science. I'm done with it. It's over. I'm going to keep lobbying for it.
We did talk about the Ben Franklin effect in a past episode, and we talked about it in the positive sense, but I think it's interesting to look at it in the negative sense. Basically, the Ben Franklin effect is that Ben Franklin, he wanted someone to like him, and so he had that person do him a favor. And by doing him a favor, the person's brain was like, well, I must like him. I just did him a favor, and that's how it works.
Yeah, I'd be an idiot to help out someone that I don't like,
right?
But it was someone he didn't like until then.
Right, exactly. So if you want someone to like you, get them to do you a favor, which is counterintuitive. The other way that that can work is if you're too nice to someone, they're going to dislike you. They're going to be less likely to like you because you're like building up this debt of niceness. And apparently the instinctive way that the human mind works is we're like, ah, he thinks he's better than me, son of a bitch.
Or like, he's being so nice to me, he must be inferior to me in some way. Like, otherwise, why would he be? Why would he be so nice to me all the time? Alex, is there a Vonnegut quote for this?
Probably not. I feel like I've felt the conscious version of that where it's like, they did me a huge favor. Ah, how am I going to do that favor back? Oh, boy. But I feel like that unconscious one is a lot more pernicious. Like, it's much sneakier.
Yeah, it's a completely bizarre thing that basically means that nice people are shat upon.
because it's sneakier. Like it's like I feel like it sneaks up on me because of maybe the number one fallacy I ever have ever, which is just that we're not apes. Like we're somehow not a herd of chimpanzees with alphas and betas and like just kind of operating on that level. Like we aren't in some ways. We have roads, but you know, there's it's one of those things that you just don't think of as like, oh yeah, this is a herd, I guess. Like there are sort of baked in things that we don't think about like that.
Yeah, that like these instincts have adapted to this culture that we built thinking we were above it. And they, yeah. it kind of follows us through to these new rules we've built. Like it's the same instinct that we're acting out with like manners and jobs and all these things that chimps don't have are still the same thing chimps are doing, but just dressed up in this facade of.
Well, we've decided to be better than it, but we still like have that instinct and we just have to be cognizant. You know?
Yeah, maybe the chimps really are the ones who have it figured out. Like maybe we should just go back to the trees.
Yeah. A lot of the world is just kind of randomly organized. Like cities are all located in the Midwest, are all located next to rivers, even though we stopped trading along rivers like many, many years ago. And I think there's a lot of ways in which the human neurological system is similar in that, like, all of the benefits and features of our neurological system were built for a time when we were still trying to climb out of the food chain. And one example is the fact that your brain is designed to basically remember people that you dislike more than you remember people that you like. And that's because back when we were trying to survive being eaten by things, it made more sense for us to remember a threat than it was to remember a joke somebody told you. And so threats and negative interactions become more embedded in our memory than positive ones. And so the world as it exists in your brain after a number of years of that happening is just like a shittier, more negative place than it actually is because you're remembering the threats and not storing the fun, good times as much.
Well, I think it's what's his name? Robert Sapolsky. I think he has a book called Why Zebras Don't Feel Stress or Have Stress, and it's a lot to do with that. Like they aren't tracking fear the same way we do. Like they're just focusing on essentially what they can deal with and what they can run away from, and we're just constantly, partly because we have a brain that's evolved to be very social, but we are just constantly like, why did Diane look at me like that? I don't know. That's weird. And like, they're not wasting that energy in the way we are.
Well, we're wasting the energy, but this is also the thing that I think you can tie those skills back to everything we've built and why we're not grazing right now and being stalked by a cheetah. And it's because we are so aware of each other socially and so aware of our status and have ambition and all these things that are very destructive, but also allow us to build cities and make movies and nuclear weapons. And
absolutely. It's double-edged.
Like terrorism and all.
Went to terrorism?
Shit,
oh, no.
Back, again, I guess we'd be better off grazing in the grass.
In this sponsored comedy podcast, we always like to bring it back to 9/11. We wrote a whole article about how when we argue with someone, we are not even trying to get to the truth. All we're trying to do is win. And they've like done brain scans of that, where people are just like, there's dopamine rushes only for winning, even if you're like cheating, even if you're like making shit up. And then when you do a study of people before and after an argument, even if somebody has clearly won the argument, the person who lost is even more embedded in what their opinion was beforehand, because that's just how our brain was built. It was built to win, not to seek some eternal truth.
Yeah, which is the most terrifying thing in the world to me. Hearing that, I think like, oh, how do we have a society? Like we would just keep arguing with each other and keep trying to be right all the time. But I guess it's just somehow the truth sinks in after, hopefully, for a lot of people, because otherwise, I don't know how we live with each other.
Yeah, and look at how hard we go after politicians for like flip flopping so consistently. Like you say one thing and then you change your mind later. You're able to implement information you learn and synthesize evidence with your opinions. That can't be
right. The greatest crime. Yeah,
yeah. You should commit to things no matter what.
I mean, I stand by that. John Kerry was a flip-flopper.
I can speak anecdotally just how devastating it is. Like, I keep learning this lesson, and it's devastating every time when being an asshole gets me my way, I'm always like, oh, man. Because usually I'll go into situations and, like, try to, I think like most people, try to be the nice guy, try to do the right thing that benefits everybody, and then you end up in a situation. For example, there's a person who lives in my building who, I don't want to go into detail, behaves perhaps unreasonably at times, perhaps illegally others.
Well, they'll know who they are based on
you know who you are.
It's me.
But no, it's been causing a lot of problems, and I've been trying very hard to just stay, to not lose my cool about it. Like, he will. I try not to. And then one night I was walking a dog, and he came out and said, "Why are you always hanging out outside my apartment?" And
like, "Why are you walking my dog?"
Right. And I, for the first time, completely lost my temper at him in a big way, and like the most I've lost my temper in a long time. And that was like a month and a half ago, and he has not bothered me since.
Because he's dead. Because I beat him to death with the tire iron.
With the dog. But no, and I'm like, oh, a part of me is like, oh, good, this problem is solved. I don't need to worry about him harassing me as I come over from my apartment or keying my car again. But at the same time, man, it happened because I did the thing I was trying not to do literally right. The entire time. Should I have just screamed at him right away? Would that have been? But no, it's just being a dick is good, and everyone should do it.
We talked about in an episode of this podcast about Game of Thrones and the fact that it's weird that it's the first show where people who have the tactical advantage win instead of people who are just good win because they're good, and like there's like some god above everything just being like, oh, he's the good guy, he has to win. Like Game of Thrones, we're like, oh my god, the Red Wedding, so horrifying. Like, I think that the fact that you kind of standing your ground and being like, hey man, fuck you, all right, like I'm just trying to walk my dog here, that seems wrong to you might be a remainder from, I don't think the golden rule is like by definition wrong, but I do think that that's kind of a set of rules that are sort of left over in the world, and like that actually being able to handle confrontation and not shying away from confrontation is a good way to be, or at least accepting the reality of confrontation. And I mean, I say that as somebody who's totally afraid of conflict and will just cower. I've said before, I'm a complete coward, but I wish I was more like Billy Eichner or Josh. I find it, I'm really surprised to hear that you go into every situation trying to be nice. That's shocking. I mean, you've worked here for years, and wow.
That's all true. And also you were right to confront him. And then I think there's also an aspect of confronting people that's gendered. Like, I think it's partly cultural and partly psychological, but there's this weird double standard where, like,
we're not allowed to hit women.
But they can be mean to us in blogs.
I was getting to that. No, it's a double standard where men confronting people is seen as, like, a good and active thing. And like, women confronting people is seen as, like, shrill and like, right. Like, bitchy, quote-unquote, and weird. Like, and you see it in politics and in business and in all kinds of different things. But also, I think all of us were, like, not a very confrontational man. Then you're in this weird thing where, like, you would be better perceived if you were confrontational, but also you know you shouldn't be confronting people, and there's just, like, this weird tension there where you, like, know it would be, it would just be, like, weirdly seen as positive if you were.
But I'm scared, Alex.
Same. No. It's
terrifying.
The worst.
But that's why we write things, because then we can just get all the shit out.
And I have this like weird love of fiction, and especially comedy, where people are confrontational. Like, Triumph is the funniest thing to me in the world. Curb is the funniest thing to me in the world. Like, just any fiction where people are in like big confrontations, I like it quite a bit. I think it's partly because I don't act on that very often.
Other just kind of random things that are adding to why people are so shitty. They've found that when you're in a loud environment, so they did this test where a person involved in the study dropped a thing of books on a sidewalk in a city, and they were testing to see if like passersby would stop and help them. And they found that people were 5 times less likely to stop and help him if there was a loud noise in the background, like if it sounded like a jackhammer was close by. And there's been a lot of studies we've talked about that seem to point to this idea that like humanity has like a certain bandwidth that like, okay, good takes up like 20%. Like when you open in a Windows operating system, you open like the task manager and it's like, you know, your browser is like taking up 20% of the, like the human mind is that way. And it's like being nice takes up 30%. It's like a lot of work. And so if there's like a, there's like a loud noise that's just taking up like 90% of your CPU, like you're just not going to stop. And so it actually makes New York make a lot more sense. Yeah. If you've ever lived in New York, you're just like head down. You're almost like looking at your phone in order to avoid seeing all the people who could use your help.
I used to live there and I still instinctively, when I leave my apartment, get headphones out.
Yeah,
I just do it. Like there would be a lot of times where I would just be walking on the street with headphones in because I knew that just gave me a basic layer of security. Like even if I wasn't going to listen to anything, like I just had a basic layer of security for dealing with stuff. It's like celebrities wearing sunglasses. It's just like, no, you can't tell what I'm looking at. You can't tell what I'm hearing. I'm just me. I'm just doing my thing. I'm moving to the subway.
And yeah, you always have plausible deniability, even if you're not listening to it.
And then since I'm in LA, I throw the headphones in my passenger seat because I'm like, oh, right, I'm driving. That's not a thing to do.
And they also found that people who are around like really terrible smells will be more hostile to one another. So again, explains the hell out of New York in the summer. Just hot garbage season when like everything smells like just roasting garbage because that's what the island is made of at that point. That explains a lot of the behavior that I engaged in New York. I was in a fight club. I don't want to talk too much about it.
Yeah, Alex and I were just, there was so much shanking when we went there a few weeks ago.
Yeah, but that's how I greet people. I mean,
right, yeah. It took me a while to get used to that.
Three quick ones to the kidney. That's how we say hi on this side. Another random one, that the most annoying thing that you can experience, and they've like studied this for some reason, hearing a one-sided phone conversation, hearing just one side of a phone conversation in public.
Fucking thing.
And this is true of me. Like I once was like working at a Panera Bread, shout out to Panera, for like a full day, and there was this guy sitting next to me, and he was like a salesperson or something, and was just like having nonstop phone calls the whole day. And I like still remember every fucking conversation, like all the details of like what his work life was like. And I wasn't like trying to pay attention. I was actively trying to block him out, but it's impossible. And they've found that like in an environment where there's like three equally loud conversations taking place, or like even if the one-sided phone conversation is like less loud than the other ones, you will pay attention. Like people trying to do a task with a one-sided phone conversation will be less able to do that task and less able to concentrate because you're mentally, your brain can't help but try and fill in like what the other person is saying.
Yeah, in Jack's home, there's a giant corkboard with the transcript of that conversation the businessman was having and then just dozens of pins and rubber bands.
Right.
No, that's the worst thing. When you're in a car and someone's talking on the phone and like they're having a different conversation, because what the fuck are they talking about? You're not going to pay attention to anything else. That's the only thing going on because your brain's trying to like, you just want to come in and answer. Like when I ask a question, you're like, oh, well, oh, no, right. You're talking into your little computer.
Yeah. And you would think that would be like enjoyable, dramatic irony. Like you get to fill in the other person and like build a life for like, oh, what's Ryan like? Why is he fighting with this person?
No, but every time you imagine the responding sentence, then the real person says something that makes it impossible for Ryan to have said what you were imagining Ryan just said.
Whoa, Sarge just took his shirt off. He's really fired up.
Alex is pissing me off.
Fucking Ryan, man! What else do we want to talk about? Why else are people annoying assholes?
Well, I think one or both of you had a lot of stuff about driving, just how our brains work when we're driving and why we're the worst.
Yeah, and I think some of it ties back to Dunning-Kruger and just the fact that people who suck at a thing have no idea how bad they are at that thing. I've never talked to somebody who was like, yeah, I'm just a terrible driver. Like, you rarely hear that.
It's exclusively someone who's like, yeah, I grew up in Manhattan and I don't have a driver's license yet.
I don't know how to
drive.
And
I'm terrified of it. Like everyone else is like, yeah, I'm pretty good at it. And this guy keeps cutting me off.
But there's this weird counterintuitive thing where...
Well, you're from Boston, you learn how to drive properly is the thing. Because only people from Boston really know how to drive.
You learn how to drive like a complete asshole. Yeah. I've lived in Boston. I-90 and I-95 in Boston are
all of Massachusetts, terrifying. All of New England.
93. I'm just going to keep saying numbers until someone stops me.
Because they're all, because it's all dirt roads Samuel Adams laid down. Right, so like none of it makes sense.
Yeah. One of the counterintuitive things about road rage is the number one predictor of how angry someone's going to be if you cut them off or in any traffic confrontation is not whether or not they have like a crowbar in the back of their car or like the number of prison tattoos. It's the number of bumper stickers that they have on their car. And the idea is that basically if you cut somebody off on a sidewalk, you step in front of someone, it's almost physically impossible to not bodily compensate by being like, oh, I'm sorry. Or, you know, like even if you don't say anything, like your body language is going to be deferent to the person you cut off. But in cars, you can't convey those like little micro gestures of like, I'm sorry, I'm in a hurry. So people get angry for obvious reasons, but there's like this continuum of how much you view your car as a extension of your body and of your person. And people who have bumper stickers take more pride and have like more personal stake in like their car as a physical extension of their body. And so when they get cut off in traffic, it's like you just stepped in front of them on the sidewalk and like gave them the finger and just like walked off. And so they lose their shit. And it doesn't matter if it's like a, you know, guns don't kill people, I do bumper sticker, or like a coexist bumper sticker. I would actually guess that coexist would be like the bigger assholes, but yeah.
It's very counterintuitive. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't matter.
That's also terrifying to me because that means people with truck nuts think those are actually their balls. Like they actually, like it's just, yeah, those are my balls, like my car.
Great. Yeah, that does make so much sense of truck nuts.
Right. And I think the car is me and it has huge balls because I'm me. Right.
If we can just say that we've made sense of truck nuts, I think we've done our job here as a podcast.
And well, there's also, I'm probably nuts, but when I lived in New York, I realized that like when I was walking, anytime somebody kind of cut me off or got in the way, I got very, very frustrated. And I was like, oh, it's almost as if I'm driving and they cut me off. And I think it's because in my mind, I had decided that in New York, if you live off the subway system, like you're walking as you're driving. So right. Like people walk the way they drive here, and it's very aggressive, and it's very, I need to get in my lane, because they do this walk every day to work and they just want it to be fast.
Yeah.
But it's like a weird transference of that same frustration.
You're like, I haven't been completely enraged at someone in weeks. Yeah, how am I gonna do that? That's funny that Alex is a rage monster. Who knew?
That's where the shanking comes from. From what we were talking about before, it is like everybody is a little bit, just because like you were saying, I love that task manager thing, because that means kindness is spyware. Like it's eating a lot of rotations, and it's like, oh, I wish I could get rid of this. Because like deciding to do that is very expensive mentally. And
right.
So it's hard to afford all the time.
And like losing your temper is like what, rebooting or like defragging? Give me some more computer terms. Like, I don't know.
Rebooting is like just like taking 20 minutes to go run or do something else. It's like, no, I'm just, okay, I got to just reset. Yeah.
Whereas blue screen of death would be losing your temper and having a meltdown.
Yeah.
It's just like, ah, fuck it. No longer am I using my higher functions. I'm now just going to use the lizard part of my brain.
Yeah.
Since we're talking about like sidewalk etiquette, there are like a couple of geometric sort of just accidents of how humans fit together in crowded spaces that make that an annoying thing to have to deal with. There's this thing called the flying V that people talk about who study crowd dynamics, where if there's a group of people, and it makes sense, if there's a group of people walking together, they almost instinctively form themselves into a inverted flying V. So like picture a flying V of geese and just like invert it. And that's what they do.
I was imagining youth hockey players, but go on. That's fine. Yeah.
I was imagining the guitar.
Those are also flying Vs. Thanks, guys. and so it's a form that is impossible to fit yourself around if you're like trying to, first of all, if you're trying to walk past them, because they will take up all the space. But then they're also taking up, rather than being like in a line, they're taking up space forward and backward. And so like you have to like keep your distance from the whole crowd, which just makes it that much more annoying. And then if you're like in a crowded area where people are lining up for a thing, but there's not an organized line, the further back you are in the line, the more eager you're going to be to get to the front. Basically, if you have space at your back, space is cheap. I might as well like move forward. And so it becomes this like chain reaction of like everybody moving up on each other. Wow. And also because if you're standing in a group, it's much more comfortable to be at someone's back than to have someone like behind you breathing down your neck. Like that's the worst. So if someone's behind you close breathing down your neck, you're going to step forward and you know you're going to sacrifice the person in front of you space. But if that keeps happening in a chain reaction, then you just have a mass shanking.
Well, that's such a driving thing too. Like I remember I learned to drive in a very small car, and I remember pulling up to a red light once and checking my rearview mirror, and it was just a Hummer grill. That was the entire thing I could see. And it was because they were right up against me, and my immediate thought was like, when this turns green, I'm flooring it. Like, yeah. I am out of here. Escape. This is the worst.
Red lights are more suggestions in Chicago, right? I think there's also some random facial features that we just fucking hate. Small eyes. We will look at somebody who's tired and will find them less trustworthy than that same person if they've had a good night's sleep because their eyes are more open. So just walk around with your eyes wide open, just making unblinking eye contact with people, and you're good to go. That's terrible advice. Don't listen to anything I say.
I wonder if that plays at all into like large eyes on something being cute, like cartoon characters and things like that. Like there's a Sesame Street thing where they make the pupils of the younger puppets bigger just because that evokes youth and kindness and cuteness and things like that.
And Disney characters are all about the huge eyes. There's like memos and stuff about how the eyes have to be huge so that everybody can empathize with them.
Big eyes, big forehead, right? The top of the head needs to be big or something like that.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just remember the eyes. Always remember the eyes.
Dark.
Straight into the Quint speech from Just.
What else we got?
They've done studies where they found it's people in general, regardless of education or how used they are to communicating by email, they have a very hard time detecting sarcasm in it. Like they did a study and I think they found 56% of people couldn't figure out whether the email was sarcastic or not, which is terrifying for all interpersonal communication. And it also makes me feel like it explains the popularity of emojis in particular, besides them just being fun, because it's like such a definitive way to be like, I'm kidding, I'm happy, I'm sad. Like, it's just very, very, here is this big picture of how I'm feeling. Please understand. Right. Like, I just want to be heard, you know?
My sister posted a picture on Instagram of my son and her two sons, and it was really cute. And my mom was looking on Instagram on her phone. She was like, this person posted 3 question marks. Why that? Like, what the fuck is that? My sister was like, oh no, you just don't have that emoji on your phone. But that can really swing a thing. You know how like emojis will sometimes look like question marks or J's?
Or before I updated and got the new emojis, a lot of them were alien heads. And so I was just like, oh, this alien head emoji is really popular.
Really,
but that just
right
meant
now
I didn't have the emoji yet. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but I do think that, I mean, they've done studies that basically say a shocking percentage of how much of a statement's meaning is conveyed via body language. So basically, if like you have somebody trying to say something that could go either way, like you really need to be able to see them. And so that was a study done before, you know, we had all this technology, but I'm sure that is really fucking with our ability to understand what anyone means. There's a great Key and Peele sketch where they're just like misunderstanding texts back and forth. And like one of them is like chill and like being like, yeah, whatever, man. And the other one's like, whatever, man. And like it ends with them like meeting at a bar and like the chill one's like bought him a beer and the other one like has a spiked bat and he's like, all right, motherfucker, let's do this thing. That's how, you know, at least my last 3 fist fights have come about. Just misunderstood.
Furious text conversations.
Yeah. even the amount of exclamation points or question marks you use on a thing can carry meaning, or like the amount of, there's that great, it floats around on Tumblr a lot, but there's that great chart of just ha 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 ha, and it's bracketed off like just H-A means this, H-A-H means this, H-A-H-A-H-A means this. Each right. amount of ha 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 means a specific amount of mirth, or it wasn't actually funny, or like, nice try, or like, I recognize that, or, and it's just...
recognized as a joke.
Yeah.
Yeah, and using periods in text is also, it makes a huge difference. Like, if you put a period at the end of the text, it is, it changes the entire tone of everything you've said.
Yeah, it feels like an ultimatum or something. Or it's just someone who just uses periods all the time because it's how we write normally, and they're like, I don't know, this, I just put periods at the end of sentences, I'm normal. And then those people miscommunicate constantly.
And I've been so interested in something that recently happened, and we'll start here and then we'll get to there. I'm setting up this comment in a really confusing way. But you know how people will say in text message or on the internet, like, sigh? They'll like type out the word sigh to communicate that they're sighing. Yeah. And then you know how people have started to say sigh in real life? Like that has kind of drifted into it. It's not as common, but you know, that's something.
Kind of like how people will be like, oh, a hashtag something or other.
Yeah, hashtag like, this. It's like the same people who will use hashtag in daily conversation will occasionally say like, sigh.
Right.
Hillary Clinton in a speech did that. And it's very clearly she's saying, and now they're questioning this. And she looks at the audience and she goes, sigh. And like it's really pandering and really cringeworthy.
Oh, wow.
And then Trump supporters found that and they said, oh, she's so used to reading a teleprompter. She read that she was supposed to sigh and just said sigh because she has no human emotions.
Oh, like she's Ron Burgundy.
Yeah.
Like just like whatever's there.
And it's just amazing to me how that went. Like, because I could see. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what that means. But
oh, that's incredible.
It's amazing to me. Because
that
it
can't
is
be
like,
the truth, though, right? She was pandering, right?
I'm sure. Like, when you watch the clip, to me, it's clear that she's pandering.
Well, and because she and Warren both recently did a delete your account on Twitter, which makes me think, like, oh, they've got somebody feeding them this kind of thing.
Say delete your account. And they're like, ah, that's gibberish, but I don't know.
I guess.
Fuck that means.
It's kind of terrifying that like people who are auditioning to be the leader of the free world are just like spouting shit that they don't really know the meaning of. They're just like, kids do it, I guess.
Trying to adapt to internet culture.
Yeah. But and also there are so many people who are at a perfectly decent level of internet literacy who would not understand that. Like they would hear that Trump take on and they would be like, oh yeah, that's probably right. Like why would anyone just say sigh out loud?
You know, maybe I'm wrong.
It's amazing.
Maybe I'm giving her too much credit because it does they both seem insane to me. Like both the pandering and the reading a teleprompter. It's just like one, the pandering seems slightly more realistic.
Yeah.
But
and that's really where this election became contentious.
Yeah.
I feel like. And so
that's the most important part of this whole race so far, right?
Right.
Is the sigh debate.
I like to add love Jack or sincerely Jack at the end of my text messages. What does that mean? Like a parent.
That's actually William Shatner. Every tweet he signs it with "My best, Bill," or an abbreviation for it, which is just wonderful. Because why? Yeah.
The sign off to emails, like people who have autocomplete "best," that feels arrogant to me. Or I've always read that as arrogant, and it's probably my fault. It's probably in my head, but I'm like best.
I think when Jack,
you think you're better than me?
I think when Jack Nicholson joined Twitter, his first three tweets were like, where is this going? And
it was yesterday.
Yeah, like, please write me back or something. Like,
help. I'm
Is this, like literally, like the, is this on, like, into Twitter?
Yeah, with the speed that technology is moving, it's, like, inevitable that generation gaps crop up, like, faster and faster. Like, there's a generation gap between each year that like someone graduates from school because there's like a new type of social media. Like I just read something that was like, kids are now back into Facebook after dismissing it as like something for grandmas for years. And it's like people who graduate from high school this year are now into Facebook, whereas people who graduated last year were like, Snapchat's the only cool thing to do. And it's just going to be increasingly hard for us oldsters to keep up with any of it. And I'm sure we'll end up starting the next civil war by misunderstanding emojis.
Just move back into the trees, man.
Yeah.
One entry I emailed was that we're all more racist than we think we are. They did a study where they had one group of people sitting in a room and they're like, so you were going to do this project and you were going to work with someone who was just openly racist, would you do it? And like 60% or something would say, no, that's I don't want to work with racist people. And then in another group, they had them in a room with someone that they were going to be working with, or supposedly going to be working with. And then they had a third person, a black person in there, get up and then leave and bump their knee and be like, oh, sorry, and leave. And then the other plant would lean over and just say something horribly racist about black people are always bumping knees. Yeah. Like, and then, like, overwhelmingly, the people sitting there still agree to work with this openly racist monster. Despite our convictions and what we actually do don't line up as much as right. we'd hope.
Oh, and it probably gets bound up in that conflict avoidance stuff too.
Yeah.
But even you would think that would be the thing we would go ahead and conflict over.
Yeah.
Like right. it's such a cut and dried principle that yeah. we would just be like, hey, also let me educate you about
right.
what year it is yeah. and where we live.
Yeah. There's that podcast that all the kids love, A Prairie Home Companion. Where he talks about Lake Wobegon, the city where all kids are slightly above average, and that's like an actual effect where people think that they're slightly above average or at least a little bit above average, which is obviously mathematically impossible. There has to be people who are average and below, but I think that that applies to how we are as people, right? Like how we are morally. I don't think anyone has ever thought, I'm the bad guy. Like, I'm the bad guy in this story, you know, even though there have been so many very clearly evil villains yeah. throughout history.
The extreme example is that Mitchell and Webb sketch where they're both in the SS and yeah. they're just, are we the baddies? We have skulls on our hats and we're probably not great.
Yeah, when Mussolini made a huge statue of his own face on the side of a wall,
like just frowning. Like
glaring yeah. at everybody.
Yeah.
Mussolini.
Are we sure we're the good guys?
Do you want to talk about anything else?
There's an article on the site where we talked about the trust gap, which is where they did a study where they took people and they said, hey, theoretically, you and this other person both like win a lottery of some kind. Do you think they would share the winnings with you? And in the study, about half of people were like, yeah, they'd share the winnings with me. And then they also played out a thing where they had the people actually divided up and it was like 80% of people shared it. And like the trust gap is just a general thing where we just kind of generally expect that people won't be at the level we would like them to be. Like they'll just be a little bit meaner, a little bit harder to deal with. And then the problem with eliminating the trust gap is that it really saves us time and energy to like just not encounter people and assume they'll be the worst. But when we do that, we never get corrected because we didn't meet them. Like we didn't right. actually find out. So we right. just, all our brain thinks is like, yeah, I just saved time. So whether or not I was right, like score, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think saving energy and like that kind of goes back to the bandwidth thing, but like something we've written about is that happiness takes effort. You always hear people be like, oh, my ideal vacation, just sit back and do nothing. And like, it's actually not true. It's almost impossible to be happy doing nothing. And like studies have found that the actual key to happiness is like doing things that you like to do and like having friends and like expending energy on the right things. But we kind of misunderstand happiness as just the absence of unpleasant things. So be happier, people. Do stuff.
Go back to the trees. Go back to the trees.
All right, that was our conversation. If nothing else, I hope you learned that no matter what the reason for the rift between you and everybody else, the important thing is that now you know the scientific explanation for why you guys don't get along. Now you can angrily shout that explanation for why they're behaving like an asshole as you chase them down the street. Thanks again to Hulu's Difficult People for making this episode possible. Again, Difficult People Season 2 premieres on July 12th with new episodes every Tuesday on Hulu. And if you missed Season 1, it's from executive producer Amy Poehler and Julie Klausner, who stars alongside Billy Eichner. So if you like any of those three people, aka don't have terrible taste in comedy, you will enjoy this show. It is thoroughly, deeply hilarious. On to some brief footnotes. We're going to include a bunch of links to the Cracked articles we were pooling most of those ideas from. The scientific reason people drive like assholes, the scientific explanation for douchebag behavior. Some of these articles are old, so old that they're from a time when we were still calling people douchebags. Anyways, lots of cracked articles in the footnotes. We'll link to the trailer for season two of Difficult People, and we'll link to where you can catch up on season one. And yeah, that's going to do it for this special episode of the podcast. Thanks again for listening, and we'll be back on Monday with our regularly scheduled episode. Talk to you then.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman, Adam Sachs, and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.